Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Inside Indy Sports Podcast. I'm Tyler James, and I'm joined once again by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together, we cover Notre Dame football, recruiting, and more for InsideIndySports.com on the Rivals Network. Notre Dame football opened spring practice Thursday morning, and we were able to watch the entire 90-minute session because we were there to see it ourselves. We felt like we didn't really need to bring a guest on to discuss something else. So Eric and I will be the experts from the beginning to the end of the podcast today. So Eric, let's start with this, which actually was, I was putting together an outline and then I went through the questions. I was like, oh, this is exactly what I had in mind. And Marie Biafore had asked it of us. So maybe I'd already had it in my head from her on Twitter. What were your three biggest takeaways from Thursday's practice?
So again, the nature of yesterday's practice, because it's not in full pads and so forth, there are certain position groups that stand out more than others. I will say my first takeaway was speed at wide receiver, and that's why I led my notebook with it. I was really impressed with, because I do think you get an accurate, now how that's going to translate into games and so forth, that's way too far of a reach.
Right.
But in terms of a first impression and comparing it to other first spring practices, I went, oh, okay, there's no speed bumps today.
Yeah.
So that was number one. How about your first?
Yeah. Well, I also had wide receivers on mine. It was my second one. So I'll the thing that stood out to me was just sort of like from top to bottom, nearly top to bottom. I don't know that everyone would fit into this category. There was just like obvious explosiveness there. And so, and yeah, guys with speed, even someone like KK Smith looks intriguing to me. I liked what I saw from both Micah Gilbert and Cam Williams. I think I liked Gilbert more on first impression in terms of practice. He just, something about him, yeah, he likes, he's doing everything at full speed. Like he's coming in and out of his breaks quickly. It just like, there's not a lot of slowing down there. Like he might not be the fastest player, which I right, think is one of the concerns with Micah Gilbert, but that speed that he plays with, he plays with it sort of in and out of breaks and doing everything he does. So I think that can make up for maybe not being the fastest guy among Notre Dame's receivers. So yeah, I think that wide receiver position, and like, honestly, like overall in terms of the practice, it's not like the receivers were killing it necessarily. That's what I said on the board right away. It was like, there wasn't a ton of success there. It's not like they weren't having some success, but it's not like they were just burning Notre Dame's defensive backs repeatedly, but just like watching them going through drills, and even it, with some plays down the field, it just seemed like an impressive group of guys that are worth like getting excited for. But obviously there's way, way more production and progress that needs to be made for it to be something that's meaningful and lasting that goes into the next season.
My second one would be, and again, maybe these aren't in order, but they're all pretty close, is Ben Morrison looked like the best player out there.
Mm-mm.
He looked All-America caliber, and the practices are set up to either expose him or make him shine, more to expose the corners, because a lot of those wide receiver corner drills are tilted in favor of the wide receivers.
Right.
For him to be as consequential in so many places yesterday, and certainly had the best video and pictures, that's for sure. I mean, he was a handful, and I thought that made the wide receiver, what I saw about the wide receivers, even more impressive, that they had to go against him and Xavier Watts and some of those guys. I was very impressed.
Yeah, if you didn't see the clip that came out of practice yesterday of his one-handed catch, which wouldn't have been an interception because he did come down out of bounds, but it doesn't make the catch less impressive. It was him covering Jaden Thomas, and it was quite the sight to see. And yeah, I think his confidence and aggressiveness at that position, I think, sort of feeds into the rest of the guys. I don't know that Benjamin Morrison is like the biggest talker. I think that award.
He's will, not. Will he's forever, the opposite. Mickey is.
Right. Yeah. It'll forever
go.
That's
the difference
Jaden
between
Mickey.
Those two. He yeah. is not.
But I think that it sort of rubs off on the rest of the guys that, okay, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to play tight coverage. We're not going to get, we're not going to be okay with losing a one-on-one rep. Like, I thought the DBs were very good in the one-on-one reps early, maybe getting away with being a little more aggressive than they would be allowed to on in a game situation. But I thought that that was interesting. My number one takeaway was that just the offense had things. Now I just feel like this is, maybe it's just so much related to what I had an issue with last year, is that Mike Dembrock was scheming wide receivers open. There was late motion going on. They were putting the defense in conflict. I just thought there were good situations, and sometimes it could be short throws. Like, it wasn't like they were the wildest plays of all time, but it was just giving situations for the quarterbacks and receivers to take advantage of easy throws and catches. And that was something that I thought is important, and something that I think should be long lasting, that they can do that with consistency. And seeing that from day one, I think is sort of showing that how important that is, and that it'll be a part of the offense moving forward.
Yeah, I since Marie only gave me three slots, I'm gonna play off of your number one observations. And that's, you really noticed Mike Denbrock in practice yesterday. There are times I couldn't even find Jarrett Parker, not that he was in the bathroom or something, but Denbrock is in this really bright green shirt. You could hear him, you could see him around different position groups. Very vocal, but not, like Harry Hiestand kind of vocal where you couldn't have kids there. Really vocal and really involved. And you asked the question to Marcus in the press conference afterwards about Mike Denbrock's presence in practice, and he had a really good answer about it. And I felt like it matched up with what we saw at practice. My number three was really the quarterback depth. It's like sometimes you're watching practice and the number one guy looks so much better than everybody else. And you get down to three or four and you go, when I was 18, I was the intramural quarterback on my fraternity team. Could I have been looked that good? But man, CJ Carr, if he's the four-string quarterback, my goodness. And Riley Leonard, I was curious to see at least what his arm strength was. And when you watch Riley Leonard, do you feel like, oh, there's a big boy playing quarterback? I mean, he's 6'4", 217. He's big and strong, and he definitely has a big arm. Whether it's accurate, we'll see. But it kind of reminded me of when DeShone Kizer would wind up and crank the ball down the field. That was a little bit of the vibe I got at times.
And I was obviously keeping a close eye on Riley Leonard. Why wouldn't you be? But when those one-on-ones that they start with receivers and tight ends and running backs versus DBs, I think Riley Leonard was like one of six on his first six throws. He only had one completion. So it wasn't like the best debut for him there. So I was like, man, that's not the best start. Obviously, it's new receivers and all that, but you do see a difference and feel a difference. Like, that's just not like a presence that Notre Dame always has back at quarterback. And certainly there's going to be more aspects to the game that he can impact as well. So yeah, I think sometimes when you get to the third string or fourth string quarterback, you're like, okay, let me watch another position during this play or this segment of practice. But it's hard to take your eyes off it because you're like, well, I want to see what Kenny Minchie looks like, and I want to see what CJ Carr looks like. And those guys have live arms. It's not like they're just back there doing short throws. Like, they can stretch the field. They're going to make some plays too. So yeah, I think that depth there is good for Notre Dame. Now, obviously, will it last in terms of them being able to enter the season with four scholarship quarterbacks? We'll wait to see on that.
And just, a reminder to people, they're not supposed to look like a finished product on day one of spring practice. This is your starting point and what you build. In the early practices, Tyler Buchner and Sam Hartman looked very similar in terms of skills and accuracy. It was over the course of spring and really crescendo in the spring game where there was that huge separation. I think it's natural for it to take a while for Leonard to get the chemistry with the new guys.
So my last takeaway was that Jordan Botello really flashed. I thought he had a burst off the edge. He was getting to the quarterback. I think he had what would have been two sacks, assuming he could take down Riley Leonard or Steve Angeli. They didn't escape from him in a live situation, but I thought that was good to see. I don't know that we saw a very explosive Jordan Botello last season.
I think
But
we saw a more tentative version of him,
right.
more controlled version, but tentative.
And so I mean, I think that would be important. That was I did a story that ran Thursday morning of
Before it got knocked off by all our other content.
that was like one question that each position group can answer this spring. And then it was like, can the Viper position be more productive? And I think that was like the like lone weak point on Notre Dame's defensive line last year. And I was like, well, is it Jordan Botello, or are we gonna get more contributions from some of the other guys to make up for that? Obviously just one practice, they're not even wearing pads, but he was doing really well. Now, I think both of those sacks came against Tosh Baker, so maybe that's more of a bad sign about Tosh Baker than it is a good sign about Jordan Botello, but I think at least for one practice, I liked what I saw from Jordan Botello.
And we should remind people, the practice was about 90 minutes and it was held almost exclusively indoors. The offensive linemen and the quarterbacks got outside for maybe a period or two, just to unencumber the space, limited space inside. But it was largely inside. It was pretty cool. It didn't get out of the 30s yesterday while practice was going on. It got into the 50s later, but those guys were long gone by then.
Yeah, I tried to go follow the offensive lineman outside, but it had just pat like the fifth period just ended, so we got pushed back to our observation balcony. And I was like, oh, but I can't see the lineman from there. But thankfully, they came inside soon after that. I didn't have to be too worried that I wouldn't get to see what's going on with the offensive line. All right, in terms of things that we saw yesterday, I think sometimes we can make a bigger deal out of them than necessary, or worry about them more than necessary. So was there anything that you saw, maybe just a glimpse of in practice on Thursday, that you think won't matter long term? Like it was just like a one-off, and it's not going to be anything that really impacts Notre Dame's season, or even the way you think about these players this spring.
I wasn't concerned about interceptions yesterday. I think there's just a long way to go. It doesn't mean, oh, so and so doesn't can't read a defense or anything like that. The timing and everything is a little bit different. I don't know. I mean, where there's certain positions where how they lined up depth charts wise isn't really going to matter. You think about offensive line last year, and Coogan and Spindler really didn't overtake and become the number one options at those positions until fall camp. In the spring, they came out number two, and that's one of the reasons I asked the question right off the top yesterday. I wondered what Marcus's expectations were with that. I know they want to build chemistry at some point, but the fact that the Sun Bowl starters were the number one guys yesterday doesn't necessarily mean that's where it's going to end up. So those would be the two things. And usually kickers stink in these indoor things. And Mitch Jeter wasn't as accurate as he was at South Carolina in this practice, but he was pretty good. I mean, his leg was powerful, and I think he'll get it together. I think that's one where I wouldn't read too much into it. How about you?
Yeah, I think he missed like back-to-back 46 yarders or something like that, and they were both from the
From the
left
left
hash.
hash.
So maybe there's something he was working on there that he can fix and get in order. But yeah, that's something I wouldn't overreact to. The two things I had in mind were One, what I mentioned about Riley Leonard, like not being on target very often early, in practice, like that's not necessarily a major concern for me, given that it's first day out, with new guys and like just getting on the same page. He got better as practice went on, so it wasn't like it was a practice long concern. The other thing was the cornerback depth chart gets thin in a hurry. Christian Gray was sitting out a little bit towards the end of practice. Jordan Clark didn't do competitive reps as he was dealing with a quad issue. And then, so then you get down and you're like, man, we're pretty thin.
And did we see Chance Tucker? I know he's on
No,
the.
yeah, I didn't see Chance Tucker at practice. So there were walk-on cornerbacks that I had never even heard of before that were getting
One
some
that looks
action.
like a typo. I seriously, when you typed it in your practice report, the guy's last name is DU, and I thought, well, that he
He's from
cut the name
Beijing.
off.
Well, I don't know. He's got to be the. I don't know the last if there has ever been a walk-on from Beijing. So like that was a. I was like, man,
Now, Isaiah Dunn, we've seen him show up in spring practices before, and he's pretty good walk-on.
Yeah, he's solid. Like he can he'll win some reps. But they were get yeah, but they were getting down there, and even like it was a reminder, it's like, oh yeah, that's why they brought Jordan Clark in, because I don't know that there's a really good nickel option there without him. Clarence Lewis and Micah Bell are the other guys, but I just don't know that they would be ready to be that for a full season.
Right, and there's two freshmen that'll come in June
Right,
that
yeah,
they're
that's
not early
a big
enrollees.
part of that the cornerbacks don't have the luxury of having their early enrollees on campus. Carson Hobbs and Leonard Moore will get here this summer, so that's part of why it's not necessarily a major concern moving forward. But yesterday is like, man, these cornerbacks they're in trouble when they get a couple guys dinged up, because there's just not a lot of guys there. Obviously, the top end talent is really good at that position, but at least this spring they need to stay healthy to give the wide receivers the best looks. All right, was there anything that we saw, any glimpses of practice from Thursday that, and this could be, I suppose these probably, I think mine is like one of the biggest takeaways is what I'm leaning on. Is there anything that you saw that you think will be the start of like a very important development for Notre Dame?
Well, I'll let you go first since you are chomping at the bit with yours.
Yeah, mine was just the offensive stuff that I talked about with Den Brock and the way that they were scheming things and some of the things they were doing in the running game. I just thought, I just like the creativity from day one, and the, I mean, when you're talking about first day install, you're not talking about your most complicated concepts, but even then, there were things that were challenging the defense and putting them in bad spots, and so that's something that I think we anticipate happening, but it's good to see it, and I think it'll be important for Notre Dame in the long run that those kinds of things. Are what we see on Saturdays in the fall.
I will say the thing, I'll go in a different direction. Then I'm going to go with the young linebackers. I was impressed with the athleticism in that group. I know that people got tired of seeing Maris Leafau and JD Bertrand, and those guys are tremendous players, but you see a wave of this athleticism. And like one guy that really jumped out at me that I don't think is going to be a starter, but I can't believe where he's come physically since he's gotten there is Jaden Osbury. You know, he kind of looked like a safety when he showed up. He's bigger than Jalen Snead now, by a few pounds and by an inch taller. And he can play inside or outside. And you just kind of look at, I mean, Drake Bowen, Preston Zinner, Kingston Viliamuasa, all these guys kind of around Jack Kaiser, and you go, okay, this is what linebackers in 2024 are supposed to look like. And the fact they have so many of them, it's going to be really interesting to see how the competition makes them better.
Yeah, Preston Zinter is someone that I thought impressed. Now he's doing most of what he's doing later, or like against the second and third team, so it's not like he's doing it against Notre Dame starting offense. But I do think that there's something there with Preston Zinter. I don't know that he's going to necessarily play a major role this season, but someone that I like, and Jaden Osbury, you're right to point out, like he looks different than what he was last fall. And yeah, there's just a lot of interesting options there. How does Max Bulla put those pieces together to get the most out of those guys? I think is a very intriguing storyline going into the season.
And it was fun seeing Kahanakia
Yeah.
back in uniform and playing. He was playing the well, the weak side linebacker. They have different nicknames for that. Didn't they have a different name for the well this year?
It well, you know, it's only they're, when they're nickel package, they call the Will linebacker the money linebacker, and then
Okay,
they
the
call
money linebacker, yeah.
the Mike linebacker, and in the nickel package is called the Mac linebacker.
You're the money reporter in our coverage
And
team.
you're the Mac reporter.
Okay.
All right. What we wanted to transition to now was just highlight some of the things that was said in Marcus Freeman's press conference after practice. He discussed the official staff role changes. Let's start with Mike Mickens as defensive backs coach officially, and Marty Biagi taking on an assistant defensive back duties to sort of help him out. How intrigued are you by Biagi helping out with Mickens, and do you think that's something that can work for Notre Dame?
You know, we'd alluded to it on earlier Football Never Sleeps and podcasts and so forth. And the thing that I was unsure of was how involved was he going to be. You know, I kind of watched it yesterday. There were some periods where the corners and the safeties were together more than I think they would have been had Chris O'Leary still
Right.
been there. But I saw Al Golden kind of jumping in there. We saw Marty Biagi coaching. We saw some analysts and grad assistants perhaps that haven't been officially cleared through the HR process, so their names are mysterious. We saw them, and then we also saw Marcus Freeman at times was with the DBs, and so I think I feel pretty good about where it's going to work. The thing is, you know, Marty Biagi's coached defensive backs before earlier in his
Right.
career. He's even been a co-defensive coordinator. So it's not like, you know, they said, "Hey, Marty, have you ever coached offensive line? Go help Joe Rudolph." So that he has it in his background. So and Mike Mickens seemed to be able to handle it. So I'm open to the fact that this is going to work and work well, but you know, yesterday, it certainly didn't look broken, but it looked different.
Yeah, there it definitely seemed like there was a lot of attention on the defensive backs and making sure that everyone was getting the most out of the situation, and that Mike Mickens was having some help in getting that accomplished. I mentioned
Especially
before,
with so many young safeties.
yeah, I mentioned before that a lot of teams that have similar coaching staff setups as Notre Dame with three position coaches and a defensive coordinator, do you also? They also tend to have a special teams coordinator that helps with a one of the positions on defense. So it makes sense for Marty Biagi to do that. And like you mentioned, there was a GA or analyst helping that group as well. So I think it's something that can work. I think just in general, like special teams coordinators, like Marty Biagi was a kicker and punter, so he has background in that, but like, when he becomes a special teams coach, he doesn't know the first thing about covering a punt or, you know what I mean? Blocking for punt returns. And so there's a lot of things you have to learn as a special teams coach, that you probably don't have much experience with. And so I think like that's just, to me, that's the kind of coach that should be able to adapt and add some things. And like you mentioned, he's done this before in terms of coaching some defensive back, so I think that it makes a lot of sense for Notre Dame to operate that way.
And Brian Mason, as maniacal as he was as a special teams coordinator at Notre Dame, when he was at Cincinnati, he helped coach the linebackers. So.
Yeah, and I think he did some stuff with Rovers or Nickelbacks. I think that he did some different things at Notre Dame to keep involved too, because I don't think Brian Mason likes to be very not active. He likes to have stuff to do. So they definitely made that
It
work.
doesn't take him all day to figure out how to block a punt. He moves on.
Yeah, he just knows how to do that so well. He doesn't need all day for it. The other one, Dylan McCullough, is now associate head coach. How do you think he can help Marcus Freeman in this role? What will you and something Marcus Freeman talked about is that he thinks this will help Dylan McCullough become a head coach in the future? Do you think a title like this, do you think that's true? Do you think that a title like this will really help advance his career?
Well, I remember when I was at the Tribune, I was assistant sports editor for a long time, and I always joked that it was ceremonial, but there are things that you do that take things off the plate of the main guy. And just seeing how that operated at times when Mike Denbrock and Mike Elston filled that role for Brian Kelly, you did see that the head coach at Notre Dame is pulled in so many different directions by job description, and Marcus throws, oh, well, I'm going to go to the women's basketball game and go to the combine and all that stuff on top of it. So if Dielen can run a meeting, if he can meet with faculty, if he can take some of that stuff off of his plate, that is a really good thing. And it also keeps Dielen McCullough engaged because this, he sees it as training ground to be a head coach, and that he's learning how to do those things that fall under the head coaching thing besides deciding to go for it on fourth down and one. And I think he likes it, and I think he's really valuable to have on the staff, both from a coaching standpoint and a recruiting standpoint. I mean, how often do we, Dylan will get a couple of good running backs. Yeah, he'll figure out how to make five people happy, you know? So I like the move a lot. It's not just, well, let's figure out a way to give him a raise.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm a little bit skeptical that this will be like, okay, this line item on his resume is why you would hire him as a head coach. I think in the end, like being a coordinator and that experience would probably be more valuable than having an associate
It
head
would.
coach title. So I don't know. I don't know that Dylan McCullough's next step will be straight to head coach. I think I appreciate Marcus Freeman's commitment and just like trying to help grow coaches. Like he was an advocate that he thinks Mike Mickens could be a defensive coordinator right now, and those kinds of things. So I think that is important. The different ways you can give those guys experience it. It's even like the small things like for the Blue Gold game where they have Dylan be a head coach for one of the teams, and I think Al Washington has been the head coach for the team both seasons. I don't remember that for certain, but I think that's how it's been, and I don't know if it'll be the same again this year. But I think those are just small moments where the guys get chances to lead, and I think that can help them in their career in the long run. Two more title updates for Notre Dame staff in the recruiting side of things. Chad Bowden is now the assistant athletic director for player personnel, which is Notre Dame's fancy title for essentially a general manager. And Dre Brown, who was a recruiting staff analyst in charge of high school relations, has now been promoted into Bowden's previous role as director of recruiting. What do you think these role changes mean, and are they signs of progress for Notre Dame?
Well, the first one is somebody else had that position. Butler Benton had Chad's position. So we kind of wondered what happened to him. And we found out that Butler is pursuing other opportunities and he's no longer in that role. He didn't get kicked upstairs. But it is such an important position because it pulls everything under one person's purview. Scouting, recruiting, transfer portal, and Chad is so organized and so energy driven that I think he's the perfect guy to have it there. And he's shown not just to be a guy that's really good in talking to recruits and their parents. I think he's really good in able his ability to identify who Notre Dame should be recruiting. He's good in understanding fit. He's good
Right.
in at looking at film. And those are the things where I think he had kind of outgrown the old position. And so if he wasn't going to get that position at Notre Dame, somebody else, i.e. Michigan, was going to give him that opportunity to do it for them. So I think this is a plus because it's kind of like moving your best athlete to shortstop. He can make that long throw.
Yeah, and I do think Chad Bowden's going to be more all-encompassing as the general manager than say Butler Benton was. Like I don't know that I ever heard any recruits mention Butler Benton without being asked about him. I still think.
It was to the point, Tyler. I always had to check myself whether it was Benton Butler or Butler Benton. That's how little we heard of him.
And so like I would be shocked if Chad is not impacting recruits in the similar way that he already was in his previous role. I think he's gonna still be very engaged with the recruits. But yeah, adding more responsibilities to him, having some influence on what Notre Dame is doing in the transfer portal, which I believe he had already was doing. But I think giving him more of those responsibilities, more of a voice in evaluations, are all things that are just a sign of like the good work that he's done, and then the belief in him. Obviously, Marcus Freeman believes in him. He uses the word elite regularly when talking about Chad Bowden. So I think that that's a good thing for Notre Dame moving forward. And Dre Brown has been someone that's been here almost as long as Chad Bowden. With he was brought on in the summer of 2021, when Marcus and Bowden were brought in earlier in the year. So those guys work well together. They have a track record together. He's a relatable guy as well, as a former running back at Illinois, and has made an impact with recruits as well. So I think those are titles that matter. And then also I think that there'll be guys that continue to make positive impacts for Notre Dame moving forward.
Two more observations for me on that. One is, do we know anybody that's named Dre that isn't cool? And then the second part of that is, a lot of these kids from the time that Chad got here, they called him Coach Bowden. So now will they call him Coach Bowden or Assistant Athletic Director slash Player Personnel Bowden?
GM Bowden,
GM Bowden, yeah.
which is funny because his dad was a GM in Major League Baseball for a number of years. So
And
I
is a
think,
good writer at The Athletic now.
yeah. And so being able to follow sort of a little bit in his dad's footsteps, although in a much different sport.
And different personalities.
Yeah, that's my sense as well.
I don't think Chad has ever had to use caffeine.
All right, let's run through the injury updates that we learned yesterday. Who is out for spring, Eric?
The five guys that were on the exercise bikes and will be sidelined for the entirety of spring practice are some that you would expect and some that you wouldn't. The three guys that are coming back from ACL tears, and they all happened at different times. And that's Kevin Bauman, the tight end, who was injured in training camp at the beginning of training camp last year. And then tight end Mitchell Evans, who was injured 8 games into the season in 2023, those two guys. Then Aidan Gobira, who was also suffered an ACL tear in training camp August last year. He's out. And then two guys that are kind of new to the sideline crew, and that's Armel Mucum, who is a reserve interior defensive lineman. He will be a sophomore academically this year. He had labrum surgery on his shoulder. He's about 2 months removed from that. And then Logan Thomas, who came here at 196, who's up to 205, defensive end from Texas slash Ohio. And he also had a labrum surgery about 2.5 months ago. This was an injury that he suffered in high school. So he will be hanging out with Lauren Lando, the strength and conditioning coordinator, the director of football performance, trying to put on that weight, but not participating in spring practice. So those five. And then do we want to get into the guys that were a little bit limited yesterday?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So then we didn't see Eli Raridan, the tight end, doing a whole lot of competitive periods yesterday. You had mentioned Christian Gray kind of taking it easy toward the end of practice. Drake Bowen, the linebacker and pinch runner for the baseball team, he got shaken up late in practice and he kind of limped off. Am I leaving somebody out? Oh,
Jordan Clark.
Clark. Yeah, Jordan Clark. Yeah, I'm just going to call him Clark. I have called him I called him Ryan in a store yesterday, and
Yeah.
Charleston pointed that out to me very politely, and so I was able to change that. I got his dad on the brain.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you get into that second generation, and the dad's on TV all the time. But Jordan Clark, he had some quad soreness, so they dialed him back. We're not really sure what was going on with Eli. He went through some of the drills. He was in, his shells and his helmet and stuff, but we didn't see him in competitive periods. And again, we didn't see Chance Tucker yesterday, so we're not sure what's going on with him. Maybe he had a class or was sick or just media shy.
Yeah, and then just a reminder that Gabriel Rubio isn't with the team this spring. That's something we reported on in the past, and that we were proven correct as he was not there. And Marcus
One
Freeman.
thing Marcus Freeman did add is the expectation that he would be back by summer.
Correct.
We thought summer or fall, and Marcus seemed to pinpoint it as summer.
But he didn't want to explain why he's not here. He said, nope.
And usually that's a, well, it's not usually, it is a privacy law thing. So if Gabe wants to tell everybody why it is, otherwise Notre Dame refers to it as personal reasons.
All right. One thing that was also discussed and sort of related to guys that weren't active, I guess we could have mentioned Jordan Faison, because he didn't do anything at practice yesterday either, because partially because that's what the plan for him is. Can you explain what Marcus Freeman told us about what the plan is for handling Jordan Faison and Drake Bowen as they're playing lacrosse and baseball respectively? How do the plans differ, and do you think it's fair and makes sense the way they're handling things?
Yeah, I had read Coach Corrigan's description of it, and it sounded like he was much more amicable to letting football have a little bit more of Jordan. But Jordan Faison is a star in lacrosse. I mean, on maybe the best team in the country, they're ranked fourth right now. They're the defending champions, and they just knocked off number three Maryland pretty handily. And Jordan had a hat trick of goals and two assists in that game. And so he's all in lacrosse. And I'm not sure that that was the game plan going into the lacrosse season, but I think seeing how good he is at lacrosse, Marcus Freeman is definitely willing to say, go ahead and we're not going to do anything that messes with lacrosse. So don't try to practice with us. Just finish the lacrosse season and we'll get you up to speed and get you football workouts. I mean, certainly he's doing a lot of running around. It's not like he's going to be out of shape when the lacrosse season ends. I mean, the good thing is there are not lacrosse games and football practices on the same dates, except for the Blue Gold game. And Notre Dame has a big game, lacrosse game against North Carolina that day, April 20th. And the lacrosse season doesn't extend greatly beyond Blue Gold weekend. I think they have one game after that against Virginia, who's a national power, and then they get into their ACC tournament and NCAA tournament. So, I mean, he'll be back doing everything with the team in June, but his all-in surprised me. That surprised me of how willing Marcus Freeman, since he is on football scholarships, said, yeah, but I think he also looks at the rest of the wide receivers and, ah, we're going to be okay. We've got some pretty good guys to run routes here during the spring.
Yeah, and I think I can understand why people would be like, well, now he's on football scholarship, he should be football first. But I think the reality is, like, would Jordan Faison be here if it wasn't for the fact that lacrosse was putting him on partial scholarship and he had the opportunity to play lacrosse at Notre Dame? I'm not sure that he would have ended up at Notre Dame if that were the case weren't the case. So I could see them doing it. Just the amount of energy that's required for him to play lacrosse, like on the weekend, it makes sense that they lighten his workload ahead of a game. Like, to me, it's much different than Drake Bowen being on the baseball team. Even if you're playing baseball, you're not expending as much energy as you would running around on a lacrosse pitch. But Drake Bowen's not, he's not, he's not, he's a bench player for the baseball team. It's not like he's out in center field running down fly balls all the time. So I
He'd
think
have to fight off TJ Williams.
not that he's not doing nothing with the baseball team in terms of stuff they're asking him to do, but I think just the energy that's required makes a lot of sense. And Drake, I think, has a bit more to prove on the football team, where Jordan Faison, I think it's known what he can do. I think he's going to have to fight for reps because of the increased talent on Notre Dame's roster at the receiver position. But I think it'll all work out in the end, and it sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah, Marcus was a little bit more vague when I tried to drill down on Drake Bowen. He's definitely not all in on baseball, but they're letting him do what he needs to do. Now they have their ACC opening series this weekend, beginning Friday today at Virginia Tech, and he is on that road trip with them. Notre Dame is on spring break, and they don't have another football practice until March 20th, which is a Wednesday. But he's only been in a couple of games. He has been a pinch runner. He scored both times he appeared as a pinch runner. One time he had to run like hell, and one time he was on board when a home run got hit. Notre Dame leads the nation in home runs per game. If he were a full-time baseball player, he would probably be competing for significant playing time, but he can give them some value, keep the baseball dream alive without being all in, but he is going to have to fight for his job to be a starter. And I know both Max Bolla and Al Golden have expressed very high hopes and expectations for what Drake Bowen can be this year in their defense.
When we talked to Max Bolla, I didn't map out the baseball schedule versus Notre Dame spring schedule, but he made it seem like Drake's not going to miss anything. Like he's doing everything for football, so they're
Yeah, he
counting on
was
him
much
being
more
there.
forthcoming with the plan than Marcus was.
So that's good for Notre Dame. A bit of news from yesterday was that safety Luke Talich, a walk-on, was elevated to a scholarship. 6'4", 210-pound safety out of Wyoming. Someone that we knew was going to be considered for a scholarship, and that was part of why he came to Notre Dame. He felt like he could earn one eventually. But I don't know that everyone predicted it would be this fast. How soon do you think he can make an impact on Notre Dame's defense?
I just remember talking to Chris O'Leary, the former Notre Dame safeties coach, about Luke when we saw Luke running around last August as a 6'4", about 188-pound safety. And he goes, "Let me tell you, when he gets to about 210, look out, because this guy's got speed and talent and length. He's kind of got that freakish size and freakish speed." And I think we will see him compete for a spot in the rotation this year because guess what? He's 210 now. And he's my football crush on defense. He's the guy that I've pushed my chips in on that maybe necessarily doesn't deserve it, but I have a good feeling about. So I'm not as objective as you are. So I'll let you talk about where you think Luke Talich is going for this season.
Yeah, I mean, knowing that Rod Hurd is coming in, expected to be a starter, I think it'd be a stretch to predict Luke Talich would start for Notre Dame this season. I think he's in a competition for maybe like that third spot with Adon Schuler. I've liked what I've seen from Adon Schuler as well.
I like it too.
So I think it's a good place for Notre Dame to be and having some depth at safety. I think it's more likely that he would have a bigger impact on Notre Dame's defense next year than this year. But I do think he can challenge for that third spot and make a crack in a rotation of some sort. I don't know how much Notre Dame will want to take. I don't know if they're going to want to take Xavier Watts off the field very often if Adon Schuler or Rod Hurd or the other guy is the other guy that's starting. How much will that person go off the field? And will they use some three safety looks? That's what they did with Ramon Henderson last year. How much will that be a part of a defensive scheme? And could Luke be that guy that plays in that role? We'll see. I think that too early to say. But I think I like where Notre Dame is moving there at safety, and I'm interested to see how he continues to develop.
Yeah, with Hurd and Watts actually has a COVID year. He could come back for a 6 year. That's not going to happen. But with Hurd and Watts gone after this season, bringing those young safeties along is key. So, I mean, 2025 is where Luke Talich and Adon Schuler and Ben Minnick and Bronte Johnson, and those guys are going to impact Notre Dame more, but you need to start bringing that group along.
Notre Dame also added a safety in Devin Ford, converted running back. What are your thoughts on him moving to safety, and how do you think this helps his football career?
Well, he had 8 carries last year as one of the 5 running backs, and now with 6 until he moved to safety, so that brought it back down to 5. I saw him as kind of the 6th option there. He's a really good athlete who's kind of found a second wind playing at Notre Dame. You know, when he went into the transfer portal at Penn State, he wasn't sure if he was ever going to play football again. He's a really good athlete. I mean, he was a top 50 recruit coming out of high school, coming out of Virginia. And I think if he's going to play beyond Notre Dame, he would be a special teamer. So why not learn those defensive skills and be a better tackler? And he's not just a return guy. He's on the coverage teams as well, and he's really good at it. Pro Football Focus had him ranked as Notre Dame's second best special teams player behind Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who blocks and returns field goals. But I mean, a 90.5 score is elite, and he had a lot of reps to screw that up and on all 4 of those teams. So he's going to be really valuable, and I think he's going to be happier. I don't know how much safety he's going to play, but certainly repping it is going to help him become a better special teams player.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it says a lot about Devin Ford and his willingness to accept that. Like, given the transfer portal, like, he could just go back in. That's the way I phrased it to Marcus, was like, he could be getting carries somewhere, right? There's somewhere in college football that could use Devin Ford as a running back, but he came to Notre Dame, he's staying here, even knowing that his days are numbered as a running back for the Irish. And I mean, maybe there's a chance that he's so good at special teams that that's a path to the professional football for him too. I mean, Mathias Farley is someone who carved out a pretty solid NFL career because he was such an impact player on special teams. And that is a route to consider, that you're probably not going to get drafted for a role like that. But if you get a chance in a camp and make a roster, you can hang around a long time if you can impact every phase of special teams. And so I think it's a smart strategy for Devin Ford and Notre Dame moving forward. All right, one more thing I wanted to hit on before we get into the questions that were submitted from our great listeners. Marcus Freeman, I think it was in response to your question about the offensive line. He felt that he would hopes that Notre Dame has a good idea of what its starting five will be by the end of this spring. Do you buy that optimism?
I buy the optimism. I'm not sure I buy the execution of the optimism. I think it might take them longer. And the reason being, the good thing is Mike Denbrock was here in December, late December, and Joe Rudolph was here all off season. Last year, he got here in middle of February, and he was still learning people. And again, it took a while for Pat Coogan and Rocco Spindler to rise to the top of the depth chart. Realistically, who's competing for those spots? I think as long as they don't make a position switch, like right now, Joe Otting is the backup center and Sam Pendleton is kind of the third option there. As long as they don't say, you know what, let's move Pat Coogan back over here and let him compete. I think it's realistic too, because you're looking at Emil Wagner as the only legit tackle challenger, wouldn't you say? And then Billy Shrouth and Pat Coogan lined up as the guards yesterday. So Rocco was a number two. I think he's competing. As talented as Garvey Lambert is, I don't see him getting into the mix, maybe other than being a number two tackle, kind of like Jagza was for part of the year at the end of the year last year. I'm trying to think of who could really wiggle their way into the mix other than Emil Wagner or Rocco. Do you see anybody else?
I mean, I wouldn't rule out Sullivan Abshur as a tackle.
Yeah.
I think there's some promise there. I don't know that he's ready to do that. I mean, obviously there's a chance. I mean, if Notre Dame really isn't pleased with its offensive tackles and there's an offensive tackle that lines up as a fit in the transfer portal, then maybe that's something that changes things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's the length of the competition there. I just don't know how certain they will be. Like if they can reach a point that those guys are so clearly above the rest, that they feel confident, like, okay, this is our five. We're just gonna keep moving forward here. And is like if Rocco Spindler is the backup, is it fair to rule him out as a potential starter when he's coming back from his injury? Like how 100% is Rocco Spindler? He was practicing out there on Thursday, but is he capable of giving everything that he needs to be able to challenge for that starting spot yet? I think those are probably things that need to be considered as well. So I think that I don't know necessarily by that by the end of spring they'll know what their starting five looks like, but I do think. And I think already they sort of have defined who's in competition, right? Like I don't know that it's like 10 deep right now. I guess the thing that could change is like, well, maybe they decide that Pat Coogan should be at center or something, but I don't think that's where they're going. So I think we know who the contenders are. I still think they'll need some time to figure out that these are for sure the best options.
Right. The thing that would maybe help Emil Wagner is if he put on weight in the late spring and early summer and came back to fall camp at 300. He's still at 281 right now.
Right.
I think that size difference hinders him. I mean, he's 40 pounds lighter than 40 plus pounds lighter than Charles Jagaza. And even Tosh Baker was up to around 320-ish. And so there's a difference in body mass that Emil Wagner has to make up.
Yeah, it's you just like if he hasn't gotten to that point yet, it's like, well, what's the reason to believe it's going to make a significant change in the next 4 months that it hasn't changed enough in the past 2 years? But I mean, there's like that doesn't rule out that he can't overcome that. Like he could still be, make an impact despite the weight limitations. Like I would say to counter that, like Tosh Baker weighs a lot, but he's not as quick as Emil Wagner is either.
Right.
So I think there's pros and cons that come for both of them. All right, before we get to our question segment, I want to remind our listeners of our subscription promo for InsideIndySports.com. We're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to the site. That will get you access to all of our premium content, the Insider Lounge message board, and you don't have to wait for the next podcast to ask us a question. You can take advantage of this offer by using promo code NDPOD. That's NDPOD. When you sign up for a subscription on InsideIndySports.com, you can also find a link to the deal in the podcast description or show notes. All right, now it's time for questions. You can submit questions to us on Twitter or the Insider Lounge message board before every podcast. I'm at TJamesND, Eric's at EHansenND. First one we have is from at Charles W. Wolf. I know it's super early, but on a scale of 1 to 10, how much more optimistic are you about the wide receiver room?
Okay, and I'm answering this literally. I am basing the 1 to 10 on my increase in optimism, not how overall optimistic I
Right.
am. So my volume from 1 to 10 jumped to an 8 as more optimistic.
Wow.
As overall optimistic, it's further down the dial because I need to see more and how this translates and so forth, but based on just one practice and Marcus Freeman's reaction to it, I trust my eyes with binoculars, and give an 8.
I went with the 5, maybe taking the easy way with that number, putting it right in the middle. I guess I just like we were excited about Notre Dame's receivers to some extent last spring too, right? I think the difference now is that there's more experienced players there, and I think like we described earlier, the difference you see is just in the explosiveness and the speed, even when they're just running drills. But I think. I just want to like look back and keep in mind, like, we thought there would be improvement at wide receiver last year that didn't necessarily happen. So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself in terms of being overwhelmed with a one day look. So,
I think Tobias hinged that not happening. I think that was the biggest development that didn't happen, was Tobias Merriweather
sure.
kind of being a non-factor.
Yep. All right. Another question from Charles W. Wolf. Maybe an impossible task before spring, but please rank the running back room in order of whom you think will have the most carries in the regular season.
To me, that's not a hard task. I would go Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, and I don't see a big difference between the two of them. I think the split would be more like Audric's sophomore year with Audric and Logan Diggs.
Right.
So those two at the top, then Jabron Payne third, Kedron Young. It's going to be interesting to see if he becomes the better third down option. He's up to 229, and then Aeneas Williams, and I'm not saying Aeneas Williams is an afterthought, but there's some of his skill set that's duplicated higher up the depth chart, where Kedron is a different back altogether. He has a different size and a different vibe.
Yeah, I would buy that. The top two are the ones that I'm not sold one way or the other who will be have more carries, whether it'll be Price or Love. I would lean towards Price, but I don't I'm not I wouldn't like want to stake anything on that. I think both of them will have an impact on the season in significant ways out of the backfield. And it could come down to just sort of who has that hand and or who stays healthy. You know, I mean, when you're talking about running backs, you got to stay healthy to get your opportunities. So I think that will probably be the pecking order. Although, like you mentioned, Kedron Young, is there a chance that he could pass up Jabron Payne in those situations? And also, like, you could also say, well, are they playing in a lot of blowout games? Because then maybe Jabron Payne's third down carries are overdone by, like, well, they just put Kedron Young and Aeneas Williams in late and they get to rack up some carries and blowouts. So that could change, that could sort of fudge the numbers a little bit, but I think that's the order. Right, question here that we covered a little bit already about from at Henry Bede. What can we expect from Luke Talich in 2024?
Yeah, I would think to compete for a spot in a rotation and maybe a niche role in some of the packages. At 6'4", 210, I think he does really well. Again, Adon Schuler is impressive to me. I think if you look back going into August last year, I think the expectation was Ben Minnick was ahead of both of those guys for different reasons, Luke being a walk-on and Adon having had shoulder surgery in the spring and missing spring practice last year as an early enrollee. But I think those two are well positioned to for niche roles and to be rotational players.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting if maybe someone like Luke Talich became like that third safety. I think they called it Aztec last year. A lot of times DJ
They're going to
Brown,
call it an Inca this year.
a lot of times DJ Brown played closer to the line of scrimmage in those three safety sets, and then they brought Ramon Henderson to be back more of a deep safety in that. And so DJ Brown would rush some, like you would like. Luke Talich is an interesting body and a big body that you say, well, maybe there's a role for someone like that. Now it doesn't have to be Luke Talich. It could be someone else, but maybe there's a chance that he becomes that. I think certainly a heavy special teams role increase in what he did last year is the most likely case. But yeah, continuing to battle for some rotational work at safety. But like I said earlier, I think more likely to impact the defense in 2025. Next question is from at Alan Sturgill. Number one, Notre Dame and NBC recently announced a contract extension. What is the amount the Irish will be paid? Number two, rumors exist that the Power Two will break away from the NCAA, that being the Big Ten and the SEC, and teams would become privatized entities separate from the schools. Have you heard this?
You know, I kind of, I'm going to answer the second part of that first. I kind of blank out when the evolutions become 12 steps beyond where it is now. I realize things are changing really quickly, and anything that's too conspiracy theory kind of constructed definitely doesn't get my attention. So I just kind of blank on that. Will the Big Ten and the SEC break away from the SEC? I think all the co or the NCAA, I think all the conferences in football at some point are moving in that direction. What is the NCAA providing them at this point? Now the NCAA is extremely valuable in terms of running the other sports, and I could see them sticking with that with the other sports, but in terms of football becoming autonomous, I mean, we've been talking about that for a while. The first part of that was the NBC contract. There's not a published number that I'm confident in. What I am confident in is that Notre Dame through 2029 is going to be extremely competitive with the Big Ten and the SEC, which are at the top.
Yeah, and obviously Notre Dame gets money from both NBC and the ACC as it relates to TV money, so that make I think the combination of the two allow Notre Dame to be competitive, and that was the goal. And I don't think Notre Dame would have signed an extension with NBC if that wasn't the case. Notre Dame is still a valuable TV property, and I think is being paid as such. I'm sort of the same for you for the second one. I don't know that I would call it conspiracy theories, but it's just like there's just so much unknown. Like I don't think anyone, even the people that are in charge, know where this is going right now. Even the commissioners of the Big Ten or the SEC, I think they're all trying to figure out what's next and how to do that. So I don't spend too much time on trying to figure out or predict what's happening next because I have no control over it, and I don't know that. There's much of a clear answer there. We'll just sort of continue to follow what happens. And certainly, every development does impact Notre Dame in a little bit of a different way than others. And so
Right.
that is a reason to be more engaged when things happen or being seriously discussed. But I don't know how anyone can know. Like, I think a lot of it's going to be dictated by what happens with the employee thing first, right? That seems like the next big thing that there needs to be resolution on is now that there's a union at Dartmouth with this men's basketball team, will that be started applying to all private schools across the country?
Right.
Well, then what happens with public schools? Or will there be similar rulings? How do these schools and the NCAA or these conferences protect themselves or change to reflect the sort of
Right. I think that amateur athlete model is going to evolve before the conference structure. I think the thing to keep in mind is, even though the SEC and the Big Ten are in a different category in terms of revenue than the other conferences right now, it doesn't mean, and even though they have kind of a loose working agreement, it doesn't mean Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti are thinking the same way. They may have very different ideas about where they want to take this, and they may or may not get along on some of these points. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think that's further down the road. That's a conversation for another day.
All right. At Steve Goforth 5 asks, in the new playoff format, is there a chance the seeds get reseeded after the first round? I know ND doesn't get a bye if a top four team. But could they be seeded in the higher in the second round if they were a top four team?
Well, since I'm the podcast guest today, I was talking to another podcast, recent podcast guest, Dennis Dodd, about it, and it's something he's trying to get to the bottom of. I haven't seen any model or any discussion that there would be reseeding.
No.
Certainly, they could go down that road and throw that in there. I mean, there wasn't any talk about a 14-team playoff a month ago, and suddenly there is, and it looks like that's going to happen, but I wouldn't like to see reseeding. I think that takes the fun out of. Can you imagine if March Madness was reseeded every round? Some of the
Right.
fun of it is the luck of somebody else pulling an upset, so you don't have to play the number one seed or the number two seed. So
Right.
leave the reseeding out of that. I think that's cheating. I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, at least in the 12-team playoff, there's not going to be reseeding. It's a locked bracket, and no one knows what the next playoff model is going to be, and that's only in place for a guaranteed of 2 years. So I don't think we'll see reseeding, especially if the move is to all those automatic qualifiers. The seeding is going to be, like, I don't know who like, will the conferences determine who's in? Then there's a committee to determine how to rank them. I'm very confused and not clear how that's going to work. And I think that was part of my concern with Notre Dame prior to learning that there's some sort of guarantee that Notre Dame will be in if it's a top 14 team. You're just relying on a committee that I think is so reliant on these conferences.
That looks like they've been hitting the sauce a little bit too hard in between sessions. There's been iterations of the committee that I've just said, you know what? They're on top of it. And last year was the first time where I went, what in the world are they thinking? In what universe is Iowa even in the conversation for anything?
Except for punting and corn.
It's that for punting and corn.
All right, we got a couple more questions. Mr. Nev at Mr. Irish Red. I'm going to the blue and gold game. What are other activities being planned besides the game?
Well, for me, lots of writing. And so you can check out our coverage that day. And there's also other sports going on, including lacrosse playing North Carolina, which I mentioned. I'll let Tyler get the more colorful activities because I never am able to participate in them. So I don't have firsthand.
Yeah, well, as Eric would know, I don't have the ability to take those in either. I don't really know what else is planned. I don't know that we would be the right people to ask for that. I experience.nd.edu I think is probably your best bet to find information on that. I did try to do some looking around to see if I could find anything. I didn't really see anything yet, but maybe that's just still to come. It's too far off, but there should be things to do and hope for good weather because if you get nice weather, it's a fun day on campus, especially with other sports going on and those kinds of things. I don't know
There'll
if
be
any
book
specifics.
signings. I mean, some of the coolest stuff is just to walk around campus. If you've never been around the lakes, if you've never been to the grotto, I mean, stuff that's not planned. Like for me, even like on a game day, I wouldn't get all excited about, the trumpets playing, in the under the dome, but just walking around on campus, going to the bookstore, picking out some souvenirs, going out to eat with your family and friends, and then reading our coverage all night in your hotel room.
And then Friday is always when the shirt is unveiled, the Friday before the blue gold game. So if you're here in town on Friday, you can go to that. I think Marcus Freeman probably makes the shirt look a little bit better than Brian Kelly did when he would try to wear it with purple
Marcus
pants.
Freeman will never be on a taco bar cake, though, I don't think.
So you can do that. There's usually a pretty big crowd around the bookstore when that's happening. So yeah, hopefully, and if people have suggestions or know things that are happening, hit up Mr. Nev at Mr. Irish Red on Twitter.
And
Last.
we'll talk about it on our Insider Lounge message board as it gets closer too. There'll be a lot of our subscribers are way more fun than us, and they'll have good suggestions.
All right, our last question is another one from at Steve Goforth 5. Is there a reason we can't go back to the old gold uniform pants that were worn in the late 80s and 90s?
Two reasons. One, they have grass stains. Two, they don't fit anymore.
I always leave the uniform questions till the end because I know those are Eric's favorite. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, and I know people get very worked up about it, but I don't know. I wonder if it has something to do with like the contrast with the helmet. Like the helmets were way worse back then. So like I think you take it with what you get. I'd rather have a cool helmet than cool pants personally. And I think the gold helmet is so much nicer now than it was back then. So I think maybe they just don't want the pants to take away from the sparkle from the helmets.
I have a hard enough time picking out my own clothes.
It is what it is. I send your complaints to someone who can help, and I don't know that anyone can help because I feel like these complaints have been happening for a long time, and Under Armour doesn't seem too concerned about it, and not, I mean, if Notre Dame was too concerned about it, they probably would have insisted on a change as well. All right, that is it for today's episode of the Inside Indie Sports Podcast. If you don't already, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, give us a star rating, leave a review, and share our podcast feed with someone who has a spring break vacation planned. As I mentioned earlier, we're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to InsideNDSports.com. So please take advantage of that with the code NDPOD. That's NDPOD. We're probably going to take a week off for the podcast next week as we catch our breath for the return of spring football. That will happen after Notre Dame spring break. There'll be the start of the women's basketball tournament then too. So we're gonna try to recharge next week and be back at it. But we'll still be on YouTube on Monday for Football Never Sleeps, so you can catch us there. Until then, stick with InsideIndieSports.com for all your Notre Dame coverage needs.